Lesson 13 then is on the Catholic Church and the Communion of Saints. And was it number 26 that we finished?
I think we finished 26.
Catholic stability of doctrine over the centuries is a mark of the Church's authenticity. Remember what we're talking about. We're talking about recognizing the one true Church by the four marks, as we call them, namely one holy Catholic and apostolic Church. And here, Catholic stability would refer to what? Well, unity. We refer to unity, and we distinguish between unity as historical and unity as geographical. And here then, the continued stability in doctrine over the centuries would mean historical unity, sometimes called continuity, as a mark of the Church's authenticity. Remember what we're after when we speak of identifying the Church's authenticity by the four marks. We mean that there are naturally, rationally provable signs that would indicate that the Catholic Church now is the Church which Christ established. How, in other words, can we identify the true Church now as being the Roman Catholic Church because over the centuries she has maintained her stability or continuity of doctrine? As I think we've said before, stability of doctrine is a moral miracle. In other words, the human will is too liable to fail, wanting to do whatever each person wants. And consequently, continuity of teaching on almost anything, that certainly, when it comes to doctrine which is beyond the human mind's comprehension or of moral precepts which are beyond the human will's acceptance, even for a short time to get people to agree on almost anything is difficult. To get them to agree on truths which their minds then submit to, and moral precepts to which their wills must submit, that we call a miracle of the moral order. Now, the word moral, I think we mentioned, there are three words that in theology are perfect synonyms: moral, human, and free. Moral, human, and free. A human act is a moral act. A moral act is a free act. For free human beings to agree, even at a given period of time, let alone or over a stretch of time, is what we call a moral impossibility. Consequently, there must then be some divine power at work in the Church to ensure this kind of continuity in the acceptance of faith. And notice too, since by definition The mysteries of faith are beyond the human mind to comprehend. And this continuity should not only include simple folk, unlettered, uneducated, but, well, frankly, the best minds of the age. And I think I've dealt enough with the learned world of our day to say that the best minds that the non-Catholic world can provide are amateurs, compared not just to the minds that submit to the faith, but to the minds that believe and understand the faith in any day. Number 27, the papacy of divine origin, but not the papal primacy. That is false, but widely held, as I'm sure you know, in many, even not a few, Catholic circles. All right, say the quotes scholars. Christ did indeed choose Peter to be the head of, say, the apostles. But don't tell us that having been chosen by Christ, that Peter had successors. In other words, that the papal primacy, which remember, differs from the papacy. The papacy as such is simply that there is someone who is head. But everything, and I mean everything, depends on what sense we understand the papacy or the pope to be the head. The sense in which we understand it is that it is supreme authority, and even more sharp, supreme jurisdiction. That, we believe, is of divine origin. Not only that Peter, in his day, happened to be chosen by Christ to be that of the apostles, because somebody had to. Had the apostles after Christ's ascension to heaven. That Christ intended to establish the papacy as an institution until the end of time. Now for that, we can go to the Bible to find the foundations. But as we've been saying, the Catholic faith does not rest on the Bible alone. And consequently, we need to heavily rely not just on this truth, but on so many things we believe. We have to rely on revealed tradition. Now we believe that tradition, revealed tradition, closed with the death of the last apostles. And therefore, even after Christ's ascension, depending on how you calculate, 34 or so A.D., death of St. John, the last of the apostles, about 100 A.D., so you've got 65, 66 years, which is almost twice as long as was Christ's stay on earth. And even during his stay on earth, most of his visible stay on earth, Christ did not preach. We hold the divine revelation continued after Christ's ascension until the end of the apostolic age, back then to the papal primacy. It is not coincidental, not even merely providential. It is a revealed fact that Peter had successors in the first century. And among the famous letters of the popes in the early church, the most famous, which all of you should read, is the letter of Pope Clement the First to the Corinthians, date about 85 A.D. In other words, when we say that the papal primacy is of divine origin, we are in effect saying that it was divinely revealed. Now, knowing that Peter would be the head of the apostles, but that Christ wanted Peter to have successors. He did have successors. And those successes were recognized in the first century. Am I clear? For us Catholics, I cannot tell you how important it is to realize that divine revelation continued after Christ's ascension into heaven, and we hold until the end of the apostolic age. During then, the about two generations after Christ's ascension, there were popes. They lived in Rome. And their authority was recognized already in the first century as of divine origin. Moreover, ever since, there really has been only one real crisis that the Catholic Church has ever faced. She's facing, as we know, now. The number of heresies is almost countless. Long polysyllabic names. Monothelitism. Jansenism is rather simple. Patripassionism. Nestorianism. You name them. At root, finally, all the heresies, historically, have boiled down to the rejection of number 27. In other words, not 27 as it stands is false, but the fact that the papal primacy is of divine origin, and that therefore, whenever, and there have been all kinds of amateur heresies, which the Vatican gets flooded with all kinds of weird ideas. And by the way, their number is legion. The capacity of the human mind to invent error is almost infinite. So they have to be really substantive heresies of some importance. And they have to be backed by bishops before Rome even bothers with a heresy. Every successful heresy in the history of the church has been backed by bishops. All of them? Question. All of them? Period. Consequently, at root, therefore, it is a denial that the papal primacy of the supreme authority of the bishops of Rome over the centuries, which when the chips were down, and they were very learned men, these heretics, and had a following, otherwise he wouldn't even know their names. But in the last analysis, it was the fact that they refused to admit or accept the authority of the Bishop of Rome. Because every major heresy in the history of Christianity has been condemned by the Bishop of Rome. Every one of these, as I told you, deserves 2 hours of explanation. every one of these statements. In other words, this papal primacy being of divine origin is something which has got to continue to be believed always, because heresies, as errors in doctrine, or heresies also in moral teaching, for example, there are now learned studies made in nominally Catholic publications defending homosexuality, defending it. With long polysyllabic words, footnotes, and consequently, this papal primacy, being of divine origin, is something which we, especially in our day, have better be clear about, because in the last analysis, how do we know whether men like Skillebeck or Hans Kuhn, and of course, oh, the number of names I could give you that I forbear even identifying certain names for prudential reasons. What does the Church say? What does Rome say? If the Holy See says that's wrong or not true, may not be done, may not be followed, then for a Catholic, it's been true over the centuries, it is true now. We continue, number 28. Since Vatican II, there is less need to identify the true Church. You know, some of these answers should be not only false, but it ought to be, yeah, stamped or maybe written in blood. And just not again coincidentally. Today, I have two ladies visiting me. And one of them showed me a very learned article published by a prominent, well, Catholic writer at a well-known, large Catholic university. And I didn't know that he'd be touching on question 28. But in his article, I just spent about 5 minutes looking at it. I'm getting a Xerox copy. It says, the idea of the Catholic Church being the one true Church is a sign of being simplistic and out of touch with the times. Well, we better know whether that statement, in other words, that there is one true Church, can even be affirmed, let alone proved. Maybe we ought to know what it means. Again, let me just spend a few minutes on number 28. Notice, identify the true Church. That can mean many things. What does it basically mean? It basically means that the Church which Christ founded had been entrusted by Him with the fullness, and the key word is fullness, with the fullness of revealed truth. Secondly, it means that this Church founded by Christ has been entrusted by Christ with the possession and protection of this fullness of the truth. Thirdly, it means that the church founded by Christ is divinely assured of all the light she needs to explain the truth. Fourthly, it means that this church founded by Christ is divinely authorized to apply this truth or these truths committed to the church to the lives of the faithful. In other words, although philosophically speaking, truth belongs to the mind. Remember what truth is. Truth is conformity of intellect with reality. If in reality this is a pair of glasses, and my mind says this is a pair of glasses, if it really is a pair of glasses and my mind thinks it's a pair of glasses, my mind possesses the truth. Why? Because what's from the mind inside of me corresponds with reality outside of me. That's the essence of truth. However, when we say that Christ founded a church, our fourth explanation, which is the true church, that this church is divinely authorized by Christ until the end of time to apply the truths which the church has been given or entrusted with. Now the church then has the right to apply these truths to the daily lives of the people. And that's where the crunch comes in. It's one thing for a person to believe with a mind, provided it does not affect my daily life. But if I'm a married man and I believe that Christ made marriage monogamous, and my secretary is more attractive than my wife, yeah, I won't deny that she's more attractive than my wife, because I don't dare tell my wife that. But then, if I believe there is one true church founded by Christ, then that truth of faith on monogamy means that if I want to remain a Catholic, I must remain faithful to my wife. I also had to think, by the way, the other day. It's not official, but it's, I think, as accurate as can be found. Last year, 1991, over 50,000 annulments of marriages are given in the United States. As I tell people, and I mean it, and I'm saying it here, I'm being recorded, the days of America are numbered, barring what I hope will take place, a miracle of moral conversion. And the Catholic Church will survive only, and this adverb is revealed, only where people still believe what Christ says. Man puts away his wife and marries another, he commits adultery. So on all four levels, you see, the word "true church" is not just an adjective as a kind of a moniker. "True church," it means the possession of the truth in those four ways in which we've described it. I have my hearing aid on. If there are short questions, I don't like to have a conversation much in chapel. Are there any so far? number 29. The Catholic Church is a teacher of nations. And by the way, a document of Pope John XXIII, and the title is, it's on the church, Mater et Magistra. In Latin, the word for teacher is magister for masculine and magistra for feminine. So it's on the church as mother and teacher. That answer, that statement, of course, is true. Is true. Embarrassingly true. So true that every Catholic realized how true it is. How do all the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Mormons and the Hare Krishnas multiply times 100 in our zeal? Listen, we believe the Catholic Church, having been entrusted with the fullness of divine revelation, she then not only may, but must teach. Teach whom? Teach everybody. Last summer, I was first called up and am written to by a priest in Washington State. Remember, they voted, remember that? Euthanasia, remember? And thank God, they voted it down. But if you watch the Detroit papers, that murder of a doctor is a plant. He's being used. There are powerful forces in America. They want to legalize, indeed legislate suicide. Legislate, not merely legalize. As it has been, for example, legalized in Denmark, to just mention one country. In other words, the key word there is nations. And when this priest wrote to me, another priest writing in a Catholic magazine happened to know the priest well. But he made a statement, this priest who answers questions in a Catholic magazine. He said, the Catholic Church should not impose her teaching on the civil law, and specifically, if you please, on this matter of euthanasia. Would you mind closing the door too, please? So what I did, I read what this priest writer had said, and he was just dead wrong. So then I wrote a carefully written letter to the priest whom I may never meet in Washington State, knowing what he would do with the letter. Publicize it, because my Lord, they don't say now the Catholic Church doesn't have a right. It has a duty. Right, my eye, that's my left eye. Has a duty to teach the nations. That's one reason why we're here. And why, for years, the Holy See has been encouraging me to train, or whatever I can do, to train the laity. Somebody better keep the faith, better know it, and then teach it to others. Somebody better do it, otherwise it will die out. There are 1900, maybe I told you, some 1900 extinct Catholic dioceses in the world. Did you know that?
By extinct, you mean no longer in existence?
No longer existing. Including the Diocese of London. There have been no Diocese of London since, at least since Elizabeth I. In other words, see, the faith has been wiped out. Now it's coming back, but should we know enough about England? Although, thanks to Cardinal Newman, there were some researches of the Catholic faith, and now Catholics have some freedom in England. And by the way, they cannot, as you probably know, be members of the royalty. You know that. No Catholic can be a member of the British royalty. At any rate, now the Muslims, the principal reason, there are many others, but between the Muslims and the Protestants, the two main reasons for the extinction of close on to 2,000 once flourishing Catholic dioceses. And we're living in a period of the Church's history where this kind, ecclesiasticide is going on. The death of the Church. And of course, now there are other parts of the world, the Catholic Church will never die out. The latest figures from Rome are about 900 million professed Catholics. But that does not mean that the Catholic Church will survive everywhere. And what's going on in certain countries and some dioceses, it's been my work for 21 years for the Holy See. Keep the faith alive. That's why you're here. And one reason I thought we could even speak before the Blessed Sacrament, because this is not, believe me, this is not mere erudition. This is the faith. Number 30. The marks of the true Church are equally evident in all countries. No. Those marks, four basic marks, unity, holiness, Catholicity, and apostolicity. Unity. My dear friends, you don't have to say equally evident in all countries, not equally evident in all dioceses. Dare I say not equally evident in all parishes. Am I still making sense? But remember, behind these four marks is a great responsibility on all of us, so that we, as far as in us lies, maintain such verifiable identity of the true Church as not only those outside the faith need, but those inside the faith need. When you find one priest saying this, another one saying that, or people telling me, traveling 40 miles, they tell me, on a Sunday, to go to a mass in a parish where they can identify with what is being told them in the homily. In other words, we have a duty, first, to know our faith well enough, and then above all, to live it in such a way that then we will be, I could use the word, walking marks of the true Church. And let me tell you, speaking of one person, people want it. They desperately want to hear the truth. They really do. And over the years, and I'm sure at least on one occasion, me on the faculty of 6 Protestant seminaries, I have never once been asked to give one lecture on Protestantism. I was on Catholicism. Whether they're not Catholic, they want to know, well, what does this church calling itself a Catholic church, what does it teach? The hunger for the truth. And of course, somebody better provide the nourishment. But we have to have that food, first of all, masticated ourselves, and be able to share it with others. Number 31. A Catholic may be justified for leaving the church. No. Sometimes, if over the years we've heard what sounded like a cliche, once a Catholic, always a Catholic. Now we know that being a Catholic means not only professing to be a Catholic, nor do we mean that a Catholic may not change the verb, that a verb that a Catholic cannot even fall into grave sin and live really an evil life. But by leaving the church here, we mean it is mind denying that the Catholic Church is indeed the true church founded by Christ. Or, as by the way, even the 5 minutes at most that I spent this afternoon in reading this learned article, it said that we are now in an age where we recognize that the truth is, well, a foregathering. That means a foregathering of all the different religions. So to leave the church would mean either denying that the Catholic Church is indeed the true church founded by Christ, or in effect denying that by claiming that either another church is the true church, or claiming that there really is not any one true church, but that somehow Christianity is an amalgam, or even that religion, the true religion, is still in process. Well, when it enters the mind and the person either explicitly or implicitly denies that the Catholic Church is a true church founded by Christ, behold, that person is not only God can judge the human heart, but objectively a mortal sin. Objectively. And there are two grounds for saying that. The two grounds are reason and grace. The human reason, human mind, cannot. That's what we hold. The human reason cannot find justifiable grounds for leaving the Catholic Church in the way we've described it. All kinds of pseudo quotes reasons, rationalizations. In other words, truth cannot be in conflict with itself That makes sense. If the Catholic Church is indeed the true church, then to claim that valid reason can be found for denying that the Catholic Church is the true church, well then, that would be truth in competition or in contradiction with the truth, which is itself a contradiction. It's secondary. That if a person does indeed leave the church, and believing, notice what we're saying, with the mind, either explicitly or implicitly denying of the Catholic Church as a true church founded by Christ. The second grounds for invalidating any claim for leaving the church is that God's grace will never be wanting. In other words, God's grace will always be provided for the person who had been a Catholic, had believed. You're not even talking about what age the person would have to have. And teaching the theology of faith, I told my students, even one intelligent act of faith made after the use of reason already establishes that person as being a Catholic, not only because he or she was baptized, but the mind has accepted revealed truth, and God's grace will never be wanting to sustain that person in the possession of the truth.
Is that true?
Pardon me if I'm missing somebody.
Is that true even if the person, let's say a child, has had the faith misrepresented to them?
Well then, you mean from childhood or in childhood?
Let's say they've got bad instruction.
Well then, notice, first of all, the church's teaching is that no one, to use the language that we've got here, that no one, no Catholic, can leave the church, the Catholic Church, without mortal culpability. That's the church's teaching. Now, that's the basic premise. Now, under what conditions would a person be mortally culpable? So, I would say that if the person's instruction or education had been faulty, well, then the person may not ever even once have made a single act of faith in the one true church. Am I making sense? Which, of course, there are horrendous consequences to Michael's question, because there's so much confusion and among the young nowadays. By the time these young people become older people, and by the way, we already are reaping the fruits, because it's a good generation that already has been deprived in so many ways